You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. I am here today with a father-daughter pair that I am really excited about. They are already laughing, which means they too are excited about. It is with great pleasure that I have with me today Peter Gallagher and Catherine Gallagher, recent Tony nominee from Broadway's Jagged Little Pill.
Yay!
And Peter, her biggest fan, who we also are big fans of from his glorious career on Broadway, on the big screen, on the small screen. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm here with Peter and Catherine. Hello, you two.
Hello.
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 It's lovely to be here with you.
Oh, it's so great to be here with you. Eva, I feel like now you're going to just see where I get it from. You're going to be like, oh, this explains her entire personality, which is helpful.
Well, not just half your personality.
hope so.
That half.
And what's really funny or sort of interesting is like there was a portion of this pandemic where you were living under the same roof. So that father-daughter relationship had to sort of rediscover itself as full-on adults in a pandemic sharing a home. So I know you're apart now, but do you miss each other?
It was glorious.
Oh, yeah.
And there was nothing adult about it. We don't have and we don't have any expectations of achieving that status for years. But it was great. It was great. I loved it. I could see it was torture for Catherine and mother. But their mother and I didn't mind.
It wasn't torture. I think it was really nice. And it was actually, it was definitely interesting being in this time of like, oh, the world feels like it's absolutely ending. But at the same time, I'm like back under the same roof as my parents and my brother. And I feel like I'm 16 in sort of the best way. Because I feel like when I'm with my parents, I'm like, oh, well, nothing bad's going to happen because my mom and dad are here. You know, it's just this like nice sort of, it was like a really, really special way to spend the summer. I don't think I ever expected to get to spend that much time with my parents as an adult ever. I do think that when, you know, especially growing up sort of living in both New York and LA and always sort of, and then, you know, going into the same industry as you, Dad, it's like our whole family has.
Wait, what?
Surprise!
What?
I know.
I'm sorry. Dad joke.
more will come. Warning to all.
I'm just getting warmed up.
But I do feel like I, you know, our whole family is so used to being in so many different places and in a state of like what a lot of people would sort of find like
terrible.
In a state of like what most people would find to be like, you know,
unsettling,
crazy. Yeah. Like unsettling. I think you grow up sort of learning how to find home in many different places.
Where you are.
Right. Yeah. And so for a lot of this pandemic and these sort of like new circumstances, it's like, I think, you know, our family was sort of really good at adapting to it because our family is constantly adapting to new circumstances and new cities or places or, you know, combinations of cities at a time.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Having a father in showbiz, I think forces adaptability. That makes a lot of sense. So this is a show about firsts. Usually we have one guest. Today we have two. So we're going to talk about both your firsts. And I'm going to leave the unruliness up to each of you, not determining who gets to speak first. I think that will be more entertaining. But having a Tony-nominated daughter, in addition to a wonderful daughter, a talented daughter, a successful daughter, like the day that news came in, what did that feel like?
It was really powerful. I was so happy that the right thing happened. And I was so concerned that look, it's a tough road, Broadway and the Tonys in particular, especially what they've become. They certainly weren't like that, you know, years ago. Now they're, it's like a death match. and you know, I know what it's like not to be nominated. I know what it's like to, and how painful that, and know what it's like to be nominated. And so I just, and it's never really had anything to do with the quality of the experience I've had on stage or so I was just really hoping that she wouldn't be hurt too much. And then when it turned out well, I was just so deeply grateful to, you know, the fates, to the Tonys, and that she had some good news. I was just really, you know, little bits of good news like that can keep you going for decades, for years. And I also love the fact that she got her nomination in the theater that I got my nomination, my first nomination in 1986. So we love the Broadhurst. I was actually working. I was doing an Audible book with John Lithgow and a bunch of people. And the whole time I'm thinking, they're going to announce. Oh, God, they're going to announce. And then I rapped, walked down, and got the news. And she was on the phone. It was beautiful.
That's amazing. So the show you were in when you were nominated at the Broadhurst was which? Was
that Long Day's Journey and Tonight.
Oh, that's amazing. That's, well, that's a nugget if I've ever heard one. That's beautiful. Yeah, well, that's
pretty cool.
Let's dive in. Let's dive into our first. Catherine, we're going to hear more from you on how that all felt as well, but we're going to get there. First show you were ever in. Tell me about it.
Who are you talking to?
Ooh, well, either one, Dad.
This is where you duke it out, kids.
Oh, no, I'll be quiet now. I'll shut up.
The first show I was in, the first, like, well, were my dance recitals, which,
Broadway Dance Center. OMG.
Dad, would you like to explain what it was, how amazing I was in my first dance recital?
You were so awesome in hip hop. It was really, really. How old were you? Like 7?
4. No, 4, I was like 6? Really small. I started taking dance class when I was 4. I didn't take hip hop till I was 6, though.
You wouldn't have known then that she would, years later, she would be a Broadway dance captain.
Putting it really nicely. But
she was absolutely, her choreography, she was absolutely precisely correct, just one beat behind, which is actually the same thing I used to do.
As my mom said, she was like, you know, you were behind, but then you always hit the pose.
Oh, right. Really, you finished like your final pose was killer. It was like, ba-ba-da-ba-da, boom, whoa.
You could be really bad for 6 minutes and then a strong finish.
You could stick the landing.
I could stick the landing. Yeah, definitely. And then my first musical, though, was Hairspray. It was when we first moved to LA and I was Corny Collins, which was my first foray into.
Yeah, but you played, but you also did Hairspray again and you were phenomenal.
Thank you. I did it again as Tracy Turnblad, which is when I had my first kiss with.
And can I say, her mama rose at the age of 12? I'm serious.
Ethel had nothing on her.
I'm serious. It was revelatory. I'm serious.
I know.
Sure. I was looking at that show, and your mother was looking at that show, and it blew our minds how good you were. And
thank
it was
you,
that
Dad.
Performance that was like, oh, shit. Wow. She's just signed up for a life of heartbreak and mind rending.
You knew it then. You knew it then when you saw her. Peter, what was the first show you were in?
I don't remember exactly how it happened. The thing that my first show could have been the Fantastics. I can't quite remember. Well, it might have been the Fantastics because they were asking for people who could do a Cockney accent. And I had this suspicion that I could do a Cockney accent. And I also didn't know if I could sing. But I had suspected I could sing. And so I suspected I could do this Cockney accent, but I couldn't really prove it because I'd never done it in front of. And it took me auditions were 4 hours long, and I paced outside in front of my French teacher's class for 3 hours and 45 minutes with trying to get up the nerve. And he goes, "What are you doing? Just go in. Just go in and try it." So I went in just as Mr. Bissell was leaving, and I went in and auditioned. And sure enough, my Cockney accent wasn't bad, and I got the part. Wow. I had no idea. It was really a joy to discover that world on theater, because it was in theater there.
Yeah, that's amazing. What was the first show you ever saw, Catherine?
Well,
I think we had a discussion about this. It was Annie, but my first memory is Lion King. And I think they were only months apart, but I just remember all of the actors like running by me in the aisle. I was like four or three and a half or something. I was a very young kid. But I just remember all the kids, like, or the kids, all the actors, the professional kids. Broadway actors, like running past me in the aisle, like full costume with the incredible like colors. That's all I remember.
So that was Lion King. That was Lion King.
Right. Yeah, that was not Annie.
I remember that. That was amazing.
But when I did see Annie, I insisted on dressing up as Annie for every single day for my entire like first year of high school.
10 years.
Yeah.
Not only that, but she was so invested. I mean, well, she was the cute. We have pictures. She was the cutest. Honestly, she had the little boily thing around her neck.
Your daughter is the cutest.
Yeah. Well, you were. And
exactly.
But the cutest little Annie. In her mind, she was Annie. For like months, for sure. You know, and she had the doily thing around her neck and the little patent leather shoes and the ankle socks and the red dress.
At no point were you and your wife concerned that our daughter is so obsessed with Annie that she's only wearing doilies and patent leathers? Like what, what does a parent to do when that happens?
Well, you know what? It's sort of like potty training. Mm. You figure by the time they're 18, they'll have it figured out.
Oh my God.
You know, I mean, chances are if she's still wearing that dress by the time she's 18, we got other issues.
We have issues, you know? Yes.
And for me, it's like a friend of ours once said about raising kids, stand back and be surprised. Mm. And so what we were into was, you know, supporting the delight.
Yeah.
You know, if she wasn't, you know, inflamed with setting the couch on fire, that wouldn't have been good. But she was into Annie, which you know, ended up opening up so many, you know, avenues of interest and happiness and energy. And so you just, when you saw her in that getup, you just couldn't help but smile.
That's amazing. Peter, what was the first show you saw?
Oh, this is kind of cool. The first show, I saw Hello Dolly with Cab Calloway and, with Pearl Bailey and Cab Calloway. And it was the first Broadway show I had ever seen. Again, it was on a field trip. Mr. Bissell, our high school teacher, took us. And it blew my mind. I had no idea. It was like watching, you know, I was like, wow, this is like a movie in real life. And then so a thousand years later, I'm doing a play on Broadway of The Country Girl in 2008 with Morgan Freeman and Mike Nichols directed Frannie McDormand. And Morgan and I, before every performance, we would sing and dance. In fact, we sang a lot of Sinatra together or Al Green. It was either Frank or Al. And he loved Come Fly With Me because he's a pilot and he loves that. And so we were singing and dancing. It was our warm-up. And we'd talk about all this stuff. And say, Hello, Dolly. He says, oh, I was in Hello, Dolly. Morgan was Rodolfo, the head waiter in the production of Hello, Dolly that I saw.
Of course.
So that was cool.
Wow. And though we don't usually get to ask our guests this, I am going to ask you both this. What was the first show you ever saw the other one in?
The first show I saw my dad in was at Lincoln Center, Annie Get Your Gun with him and Patti LuPone. It was like a one night only thing. And that was just, I have like one memory of being really high up, which I actually don't know if that's true.
Cheap seats. Yeah,
it was true. You were in the cheap seats. It was packed.
I mean, but was it in the round or something?
Well, it was at the, it was kind of in the, it was like a three quarter, I forget which, were
yeah,
we,
you know,
the Vivian Beaumont, we must have been at the Vivian Beaumont, I think. Eli Wallach was in that production and like.
And yeah, and that was the first time I ever saw you do anything. And I feel like, I also remember a girl from my school was like in the ensemble, like as one of the kids.
Oh, right.
I feel like I had that memory, but yeah, that was the first thing. And then, but the first time I really like have memories of the performance was when my dad was doing Noises Off and I was like 7 or 8 then maybe.
Yeah.
And I just ended up, you know, like pretending like the theater was like a jungle gym. I feel like that was like the first time where I like knew all the places to go. And there was this one moment in the show when my dad entered from the back of the house and came down the aisle. And so he put me on Take Your Daughter to Work Day. He put me in like, you know, the last row on the aisle so he could sit next to me for, you know, right before he went on stage. And that theater ended up being where I made my Broadway debut in Spring Awakening, the Brooks Atkinson. And I remember there was this one time once I was in the show in Spring Awakening, my dad had just gotten off a plane and he came in and like snuck in for, you know, just Purple Summer, like the last 10 minutes of the show or something, as soon as he got off the flight and like snuck in. I remember seeing him standing right behind that chair that I sat in when I was a kid. And I was like, this is a cool thing that doesn't happen often. I was like, that's a really nice, it was a really beautiful moment for me to get to have.
That was a beautiful moment for me too. You know, that was that was kind of an amazing production because we started rehearsal on 9/11. And, you know, 4 weeks later when we were supposed to open our doors for previews, there was anthrax in the air and people were saying that Broadway might be dead. And we opened our doors for the first previews and people filled the theater night after night after night. And they made sounds of, they laughed like so explosively, it sounded like surgery without anesthesia. And I felt so lucky to be doing that show for New York at that time. And to be, if something happened again, I could run home. And then when it was Take Your Daughter to Work Day, because I was friends with the ushers and the house staff and stuff, they saved her, Catherine, this beautiful little seat that I, when I come back in and out of the house, in and out of the house up from upstage, because I was the director of the show and that of the show within the show. I'd be able to come back out and sit next to her and say, okay, this is going to happen. Okay, I got to go. I'll be back in a minute. And she sat, she was the first person, you know, she was the first person that's ever sat with me through my whole procedure before I go on, which is meditation and your makeup and that quiet time. I thought, I'm going to include her in every single millisecond of my this experience that I can. And what I loved is she got to know. And, you know, it was the same house staff to Terry. I think Terry was on the...
Yeah, they all remembered me.
And Mike, you know, was one of the carpenters. And
oh, my God. When I first started working there, it was literally like I had 18 big brothers. And I just remember I was going through a breakup while I was doing the Brooks. And they saw me, like, crying one day. And Mike came up to me and he was like, who do we need to hurt? And I was like, cool, cool, cool. I was like, no one for the record. But I just remember it was like, you know, the same doorman, this everyone. And I was like, this is the family business in the most real way.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it's cool. It's also what, you know, if you've, I've done, I think 10 shows on Broadway now. And it's like, that's the stuff that you, you know, when you see the same crew guys on different shows, and if you work in the same house and you get to, you know, the ushers, you know that this usher's daughter is working in that theater over there. And this, and, you know, when I was doing the original Company of Grease on Broadway, we were at what was then called the Royale. And, you know, there were, Al Van Praagh was a head carpenter and his sons, Jimmy and Mike, were on the rail. We were all about the same age. Jimmy went on to be a seer, like a medium. And Mike stayed on the rail, and I went back and to do that show with Morgan.
I just need you to know that you said a seer and a medium, and I was like, oh my God, he talks to dead people.
Yes, yes, he does. He does. Jimmy Van
Praagh. That's what you meant?
Famous. Yes, he's a famous one.
Wait, that's actually what you meant?
Yes, he's famous. Oh my God. James
How
Van
Praagh. How did you never introduce us?
Because you have enough of that stuff going on. but his brother, when I went back years later, this was 1977 or 78, I was on Broadway in that. In 2008, oh boy, that's a lot of years later, 30 years later, I walk in again, Mike, I hear this voice, Pete, what the fuck are you doing here? I look over, hey, Mike, what the fuck are you doing here? And it was Mike from 30 years before, and, you know, some of the same folks. And so it's a kind of a continuity. It was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is the smallest big business there is at the end of the day, Broadway. Oh,
I miss it.
Oh God. Don't we all?
Isn't that insane that it's been so long?
Yeah, it is insane, which is why we're here to talk about it, because it's the only way we can feel connected to it, I think.
TBT.
It's crazy to see what's been going on the last few years. When I first came into the theater in 77, it was a revival of Hair, and New York was like a no man's land. Mm-hmm. We thought it was the greatest, most fun place to be in the world, but tourists didn't think so. Mm-hmm. And the theater was in trouble. People weren't going to the theater because the Times Square area was just so dangerous.
Right.
And then I was in the cast of Grease, and they started the I Love New York campaign. And of course, they sent us around to be dip ambassadors to Europe to promote tourism and stuff, which was pretty funny, sending the Greaser cast to do that.
Well, it worked.
Well, it did, right? And it helped. Yeah. And then just as, you know, the tourism was starting to return, AIDS happened. Mm. And for me, when I did Long Day's Journey in 86, and then at the next show I did was 92, was Guys and Dolls, the whole world changed within those 6 years for me. It was like all the people, almost all the people that I'd come up with or had discovered me or had supported me or I'd worked or choreographed me or directed me or written or were gone. And when in the middle of it, you know, you'd see a kid who was sick on Tuesday and gone by Thursday. And so you just didn't really see how it could survive. You know, I remember talking to Michael Bennett about a show and he was gone. And these bright shining lights that came up from the same influences that we all had, the same influences and the same desire to sort of serve the theater. And that's really what united us. And then this terrible, terrible thing happened. And you just didn't see how the theater could possibly survive it. And sure enough, it did.
Yeah.
You know, but when I came back in 92, it was like a stranger. I felt like a stranger, you know. But, you know, The Fabulous Invalid. It'll be back better than ever because it's the stories it shares and the fact that you could do them with everybody being in the room together is something very powerful. For a moment, you know, nobody feels alone. And for a moment, everybody feels like we're all members of the same human family. So that'll be a good thing to remember how to do again.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Peter, your first professional show, was that hair or was there something before that? Okay.
No. I did work professionally in the Boston Shakespeare Company.
Well, that counts.
But it wasn't, I don't think it was union.
That's okay. Did you get a paycheck?
Yeah.
That's
I got a theater pay. Yeah.
Isn't that where we went like a few months ago?
No, that was the Priscilla Beach Theater. That was a Straw Hat Theater, a summer stock, where actually Paul Newman worked there and Rob Reiner. It was old Straw Hat, which had been renovated. And we did, some people from where we went to school, Tufts, took it over and started a summer theater there while we were there. And I did a couple seasons there. And I did get paid there. I extracted $5 a week out of the producing director.
Then that is a professional gig, Peter.
That's a professional gig.
Yes. So, yes, I made $5 a week.
And Catherine, what was your first professional show?
My first professional show was actually I didn't get paid. Well, but it still counts. I probably should have, which counts makes me feel like it counts as professional.
Then it must be theater.
Yeah, exactly. It was the first workshop of Alice by Heart. The story that I was told, which I think is pretty true, was that Stephen Sater came to see my high school group of best friends.
Amazing.
We got very lucky with the talent in that group.
Can you tell us who they are? Just
yes. Yeah, so Ben Platt, Beanie Feldstein, Molly Gordon, Natalie Margolin, who's a brilliant playwright. One of my best friends, Gracie Warwick, is like does all the graphic design for like Ben and me, and like we have a really absolutely absurdly talented group of friends. And we all did this concert together when we were 14. We started this theater group called the Theater Geeks of America, which is really embarrassing. But I still have the t-shirt and I wear it every day. And we started this theater group to sing, for charity and raise money. And we did this concert at the Roxy when we were all 14, 15. Stephen Sater ended up coming to see it. And he had been wanting to, Spring Awakening was the biggest thing in the world. And it was my favorite show. It was all of our favorite shows. It was like the most revolutionary thing I'd ever experienced in my life. Total super fan. And so when Stephen Sater walked through the door, it was like as if Mick Jagger had entered the building, which is how you know we were the Theater Geeks of America. And for anyone listening, Stephen Sater wrote the book. Lovely, amazing man. And so he had been wanting to write a new show that was for a slightly younger group. And so he had this idea for Alice in Wonderland called Alice by Heart. And he decided to let us be the kids who did it. So it was all of us got to workshop in our high school theater room, got to workshop the first two productions or versions of Alice by Heart. So that was our like sophomore year of high school, I think.
So this workshop, just to be abundantly clear, turns out starred a Tony winner, a Tony nominee, a Hollywood star. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, it ended up being quite good.
I would call that a professional gig. Wow.
I think so. But I don't believe. And you know what? Skylar Astin was in it. Darren Criss was in it. Noah Galvin ended up being in it. Truly an insane cast.
Wow.
I mean, I got to say, talk about rock stars. When Skylar Astin walked in the room and we were like, original Broadway cast of Spring Awakening, I mean, tears were falling from eyes.
I mean, that's why you were Theater Geeks of America.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, so this is dream time. If you could be in any show, anywhere, at any time, what would it be? And if you'd like, you can be in it together.
Whoa.
You go.
I don't think it's been written yet. I've loved, especially working on Jagged Little Pill, being able to originate a role was like the coolest thing I've ever done in my life. And so I think that I just want to get to be part of more, you know, processes like that. I mean, I think Jagged Little Pill was just sort of an extraordinary experience, just because in what universe do you have like a Pulitzer Prize winner, Oscar winner, Tony winner, like Grammy winner, like every award winner,
Olivier
sitting in a room, Olivier winner, like literally every single award possible winner sitting in a room, listening to each other to create a show, and then being invited into that process. Like, I mean, that's pretty insane. That every time I think that about how that happened, I kind of pinch myself. But I mean,
especially since you sent us an email years earlier,
I know,
in the first announcement that the show might possibly, a show might be made from the album Jagged Little Pill, you wrote to us and said, "I have to be in this show."
I literally,
and you were like 8 or whatever.
No, I was like, it was 2013,
right?
Okay, so you were 9.
Yeah. No, okay. Thank you, Dad. That's really nice of you.
20. You're 20. I know you're.
I'm perfectly happy for the answer to dream show, dream role to be Jagged Little Pill. So let's actually talk about that for just a moment.
Yes.
What, Peter, talk about that day. So your daughter, who you're excited about because she's talented and has had some success, but still is about to enter the world of theater, which is heartbreaking and can be demoralizing and incredibly tough, and says, "I want to be in the show. I want a role. I want to do this." Like, how do you then feel? What do you say?
Well, again, regardless of what I was feeling, I would just try to shut up and not spill my terrors.
You would try.
I know I can, but I can't shut up. She knows. We all know. She had started performing at the Whiskey as a, you know, rock singer, singing her own compositions. When did you start that? When you were
15. I started recording my own songs when I was 13. And then I started sending them to people at 14.
Right, 14.
They didn't let me do it till I was 15.
Right. But then, you know, we get a call from the Whiskey A Go-Go. Say, yes, we just wanted to check with you. We have a Women in Rock lineup in May, and we've invited your daughter to perform in the 8:30 slot. And it was like, what? Hello? Hello?
And how old is she? Because why are they calling the parents?
Because Catherine sent them her music that she'd been writing and working on, and they loved it. And they said, yeah, do you have a band? And said, and anyway, she
Well, because I needed parental consent.
Yeah. Right, that's what it was.
You were under 21.
Right? Yeah. I was, it was the only venue in Los Angeles that was all ages, but I had to sign a contract guaranteeing I would sell a certain amount of tickets. And in order to sign that contract, actually, my mom needed to sign that contract.
So, but this is, right. But this is the same girl who, when she was a little girl, when we were living in New York, started a band with her friends called the Tuffies. I mean, when you were, how old were you then? 7?
Yes.
Something like that. Yes. And she said, "Dad, listen. So, me and the rest of the Tuffies are getting picked up today by Mandy Moore, and we're going to be going down to Madison Square Garden, and we are performing tonight." I said, "Really?" I said, "Wow, that's really exciting." "Yeah. That's going to be so cool to be playing Madison Square Garden." And I said, "I'm so happy for you, Catherine. Listen, you know what? You know, just in case something happens, you know, and that doesn't happen tonight, you know, because things happen, that's not the end of the world either." And so then that passed. Yeah, they couldn't get the limo. Anyway, can we get pizza tonight? Or whatever it was. And so years later, it's now she's 8 years later. So she's 15. And she says, "Dad, listen, I was just on the phone with the Whiskey A Go-Go, and they would like me to perform on the Women Who Rock show March 3rd on the 8:30 p.m. slot. Is that okay? Can I do that? I need a band. By the way, I need a band." And I was saying, "Well, you know what, Catherine? That sounds great. You know, and if it doesn't happen, that's okay too, because you know it's great to be in the ring. Hi, this is the Whiskey a Go Go. Can we speak to one of the parents from Catherine Gallagher? And I said, "Oh my God!" And so all of a sudden, you know, to the point I'm making is, I had a number of years going through that felt like terrifying. Mm. Like I remember the first time, Catherine, you sang that song. It wasn't at the Whiskey. It was at the Roxy, I think.
Oh yeah,
it was like in front of all these people. You said,
when I was like 13 or something.
13. Oh, that's it. And all these people, I forget what is the song you sang. It was not an easy
out here song. On my own from fame.
Yeah, right. And I'm thinking all these people are there, and she, well, yes, I want to do this. It was for this. And I think, oh my God, please, God, please, let hurt me. Do not hurt my little girl. You hurt me. I can take it. You hurt me.
The drama.
Oh, no, but seriously, that's it. Listen.
I know, you have no idea. I know, Dad. I know.
And then she got up there and killed it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God. And my Bob, Terthiel, says, uh-oh, I guess you're going to have your hands full. But anyway, for the next few years, it was like that for a while, as she pulled off one amazing thing after another. And then finally, I just started to really love going to hear her new music and hear her sing. It was like I was going to hear
a
musician.
So you just got used to my crazy ideas.
No, I got used to the fact that you, first of all, I got used to how to be a parent in that and know what I could do and what I couldn't do. And also, it was able to, you know, it's like anything. It's like the thing we talked about all the time. Is you got to put in the hours. You got to put in your hours. You got to put in your hours. And then things start to become more clear. Things start to grow from the ground up.
I think, yeah. I mean, one thing I think my dad has always made really, that has always been really helpful to me is this idea that, you know, the achievement is never what you're going for. And what it's about is showing up and doing the work and being prepared and learning people's names and being kind and hanging up your clothes at the end of the show. And if you do all of those things and you know, the accolade happens or the, you know, big flashy job happens, that's great. But it's about what happens in between. That's the real work. Mm-hmm. And I think that message has been the reason why I, you know, have sort of in doing a lot of sort of various things. And to me, there was no difference in terms of like the work ethic that I put behind when I was 6 years old, assuming I was going to be playing Madison Square Garden, which again was just like a scheduling issue with Mandy. But but I think that the work ethic behind and the drive behind, like, you know, doing a show at the Whiskey or like having all of these sort of ideas, the idea never changed. It was always like, here's a gig and I'm going to work this hard because a gig is a gig and you never know what's going to happen from it. And then, you know, it's just every opportunity is another opportunity to get up and do the thing, no matter how big or small. Yeah. And that's something I'm really grateful I got to learn.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, for me, the reward is in the doing, and the reward is in the preparing for the doing and all the classes you take and all the studying you do. And so the best, it's like stand back and be surprised. The best thing in the world is to be surprised. And for me, the surprise is not that she's won gotten a Tony nomination or been on Broadway or this, but this little girl who was doing Annie with such passion and delight and commitment is this beautiful grown woman still doing things with delight and passion and commitment. Mm. It's just such a grand adventure, and I'm so glad to be a part of it and witnessing it and celebrating it.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome, Barbara.
Guys, it's time for our lightning round, which you don't know about unless you are a fan and you've listened.
I am a fan.
Of what? Of what? Of what? Of what? Of what?
This podcast, Peter. Of
Oh, okay, yeah. I love the podcast.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
Nothing like an Ed Sullivan impression in 2020.
God, you were so embarrassing.
I mean, we wanted to do many things on today's podcast, celebrate your daughter's Tony nomination, but also embarrass her to no end.
Yeah.
I think we are
successful. Eva, this has been humbling. And I thank you.
Oh, is this the embarrassing section? Okay.
We passed that one. Don't worry.
That was the last hour.
Yeah.
This is the fun section. This is because the show is a love letter to Broadway and to musical theater. This is the lightning round, which we switch up, so it's not always the same. Today's lightning round is for the advanced class. Okay, 30 seconds are on the clock, and here we go. Before the parade passes by, I've got to get some life back.
I know that.
Come on, Catherine, you know it.
Dad, you know it.
Well, I know it's one of two.
I almost never sing, guys. So for you, you've really.
I know, honestly, Eva, that was
it's
really.
It's got to be Hello, Dolly or.
Correct. Correct. Oh, everybody loves a winner. So nobody loves me. Lady
Peace. Oh, Cabaret.
Yes.
Yeah.
You guys.
Hell yeah. Because I
nobody
say
loves me.
Yeah.
Well, someone tell me, when is it my turn? Don't I get a dream for myself? The name of the musical?
Gypsy.
There you go. Somebody crowd me with love. Somebody force me to
care. Company.
Yeah.
Someone. Yeah.
Love that.
There you go. Guys, you did well. I swear. I know it felt
stressful.
In fact, you know what? Catherine's mom, Paula, and I did the first production of Follies after the Broadway production closed in college. And we got a letter from Sondheim saying, "We lost $4 million on this show. Hope you do better than we did." And I played Roscoe, the tenor, and Catherine's mom was one of the showgirls. And I would sing my opening number, "Hats off, here they come, those beautiful girls," and then race up to the balcony to watch her float across the stage.
You two are a delight. We are at the end of our show. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being, seriously, I'm going to get a little emotional, for being such a beautiful sign of optimism and love and family and inspiration to the rest of us. What you both have done with your careers, but more importantly, as father and daughter, I am a daughter to a father, and it is completely, it is breathtakingly inspiring and beautiful to have you in our lives. And I don't just mean me because I know you both, but into the public that gets to watch you separately and together. So
Eva, that's so nice.
Thank you for those kind words, and thank
you
Eva, so much
thanks
for
being you,
for producing Jagged Little Pill and making such a great show there for that we could all enjoy. But thank you for those kind words. And,
it
was really kind of fun to. It's the first interview Catherine and I have ever done.
And we've never done press together.
Oh, no, well, never. Now I know why. Any host has to be ready for her battle with you two, but I think we have persevered.
I think so.
I can't wait to, Peter, I can't wait to be in the audience with you watching Catherine back on stage.
Oh my goodness.
One of these days. It's going
to
be great.
I can't wait to do that.
Wear a raincoat.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I'll be sobbing.
Oh, I get it. Sorry.
Sorry. Quick study, both of you, turns out.
Woo! That was the slow one for me.
Lots of love. Fingers crossed for your nomination, Catherine. You're amazing.
Thank you. I love you.
Love you.
You are the best.
Together at last.
Together forever.
We're tying a knot.
My First Show is produced by Josh Altman, MEP, Dori Berenstein, and Alan Seals, and is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to Leslie Papa and Whitney Holden-Gore at Vivacity Media Group. For more info about the podcast, visit bpn.fm/myfirstshow. Follow me on Instagram at Eva R. Price.
You've made me the singer.
And what's that bathtub tune?
ba-ba-ba, anything but you.
Yesterday was plain awful.
You can say that again.
Yesterday was plain awful.
But that's
not now,
that's then.
I'm poor as a mouse.
I'm richer than Midas. But nothing on earth could ever divide us. And if tomorrow I'm an apple seller too, I don't need anything but you. Hamlet needed his mother.
Woolworth needed his shop.
Orville needed his brother. Or else
he'd go
kerplop. I needed to feel that feeling of power. Now every other need has disappeared from view. I don't need anything but you.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.